This is Olga Koch, and you're listening to Upfront, the podcast that's helping financial services businesses fire up their engines and accelerate into the future. So buckle up, Buttercup, because on this podcast, no one gets left behind. What excites you about the future? Do you have big ambitions for your business or career? Or do you see yourself living your best life as a hotter, cooler avatar in the metaverse? Tell me at upfront@irs.com. If you're a forward thinker from the future, you'll already be subscribed and following Upfront on your podcast app of choice. If you're not, it's time to get with it. You know I get things started here with an upfront question. Today, I want to know, how can financial services keep up in a faster world? Because transformation is accelerating at Blade Runner speeds, leaving no business untouched. And unless you're willing to embrace it, you could get left behind. That reminds me of a quote from another great movie. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to look around once in a while, you could miss it. I mean, just think about the incredible innovation happening right here in the financial sector. You've got open banking, crypto, digital currencies, AI, blockchain. That's some seriously cool stuff going on right there. But not all companies can move as fast as the world around them. How can they keep up and be part of the future? Here to help us take Ferris Bueller's advice to stop and look around is Rohit Bhargava, a best-selling author and world-renowned expert in trends, innovation, and marketing. He's on a mission to inspire more non-obvious thinking in the world, something he says will help businesses be more resilient and lead the future. So Rohit, please tell me, how can financial services keep up in a faster world?
I think it's a good question for anyone. I mean, how can any of us keep up in a faster world? And I think that what a lot of people are tempted to do is try and become speed readers. And what I try and help them do is be speed understanders instead. So I think that the way to keep up is to become what I call a speed understander, get better at consuming information without taking more time doing it.
I have so many follow-ups already. So can you delve a bit deeper into both concepts? Because I've never heard it described that way.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a paraphrase of a wonderful quote from Isaac Asimov, the famous science fiction writer. He was very, very diverse in what he was interested in. And when they asked him how he did it, he said, I'm not a speed reader, I'm a speed understander. And that really spoke to me because we're all struggling to figure out what to keep up with and what to pay attention to. And to me, what it really said was we have to, for ourselves, get better at knowing what to pay attention to and what not to pay attention to.
So what you're describing is deciding what is important and what isn't, right?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to eat the whole donut to know that it probably isn't good for you, right? So part of it is just knowing right away, you know, this is kind of a waste of my time. What does the celebrity look like now? You know, the picture that we all encounter and we get sucked into. So part of it is being really protective of your own time, because there's lots of ways that it gets sucked into things that later on you feel like, oh, I should not have eaten that whole box of donuts, like the media equivalent of that. And yet we spend our time doing that. And what I'm encouraging people to do is become more conscious of that so that you don't do that.
So you've also coined the term non-obvious thinking. Can you tell us a bit more about non-obvious thinking and why it's such a game changer?
Yeah, I've really spent a lot of time building kind of a brand around this idea of being non-obvious as a person. And what it means to me is that you see the same things that everyone sees, but you don't think the same thing because you have so many different sources of input and you have so many diverse perspectives that you're paying attention to that you're able to see what I call the non-obvious. And I think that that's something that's a skill set that we can intentionally build in ourselves. And it is based on having more empathy for people who aren't like you, being more open-minded. I mean, the sorts of things that I really do believe if we had more leaders and more of us who were open-minded and who did think in that way, like that would change the world in a lot of ways, because a lot of the conflict in the world ends up happening because people don't understand people who don't think like them.
And what are some practical steps someone can take in order to have a more diversified outlook and more perspective?
Well, I think one of them is to think outside your industry. And that's a really big one because when we get into a particular industry, we develop expertise in that industry. And that expertise comes from paying attention to what's happening in that space. And what you see over and over again is people build more and more expertise and they really know a particular industry. And that's a selling point. I mean, that helps them advance in their career, get to the next point, found their own companies. I mean, we want people who are experts. And the problem with this kind of expertise bias is what it says is it's a waste of my time to pay attention to things happening in other industries. If I work in financial services, I don't care what happens in retail. That's not relevant for me. And as soon as we take on that mindset, we're shutting out potential new ideas from other places because we're laser focused on our industry. So the first tip I give to people is consume information outside of your industry.
And how did you come up with the idea of non-obvious thinking?
I became a trends expert. I started taking all of these things that I was reading and putting the pieces together and saying, well, if this is happening in retail and this is happening in healthcare and this is happening in financial services, if you put all those pieces together, here's the macro trend that's happening in the world. And then I started publishing those trends and people started reading them and paying attention to them. And then I started getting invited to go out to organizations to teach them how to think like that and to speak about the trends. So for me, non-obvious thinking was my methodology. And as I started doing that, people began asking a very natural question, which is, do we just need to hire you to tell us what these things are? Or can we start thinking like this for ourselves? And my answer immediately was, no, you can start thinking about this for yourself. You can learn how to be what I call a trend curator, somebody who takes all of these different ideas and understands where the future is headed. And so I began teaching that. And that's where non-obvious thinking came from. It was my belief that, yes, I in some circles am a futurist, even though I don't love that term. I more describe myself as a near futurist because I don't really talk about what's going to happen in 2050 or that far in the future. But to me, it was more important that I teach people this mindset and that I don't just use futurist as a catchphrase for really smart researcher person who can do something that nobody else can do.
That's so cool. Sorry, this is not even a question. I just find it very cool that you had a superpower and instead of sort of hoarding it, you decided to share it. And that's very, very cool.
Thank you.
You've spoken about there being five habits of non-obvious thinkers. And do you mind going into what those are?
The first one is really to be observant, to pay attention to details. And what I talk about when I talk about being observant is like, walk down the street with your head up, not in your phone. I mean, that's a very simple first step to do, right? Like don't send that text message while you're walking to the bus stop or wherever. Instead, look around, see what's going on, like see what's happening. So that's the first piece. The second one is to be curious, to really think about what does this mean? Like ask bigger questions, pay attention to those details. Be thoughtful. Is the next one. And being thoughtful means taking time to think, like pause, take a moment, actually pay attention to what the details are. Be elegant was the next one. And elegant was maybe my English major coming out. It was like, be intentional about the words that you choose when you describe something, like be very specific about it. And the last one was one that sometimes people don't quite understand what I mean by when I say be fickle. And be fickle to me means take an idea, save it, and then move on. It's sort of the same equivalent idea of working on something really hard and then you reach this impasse and then you go and like take a shower and you get the brilliant idea, like you get the solution in the shower. And it's not because of the shower, it's because you gave your mind a break, but it was still working on that problem in the background. And in the background, it came up with what the solution was because it was allowed a little bit more space to think about it. And so being fickle means save the idea, move on. It may not be relevant in the moment, but later on, it might be relevant.
All right. And this is something that you sort of teach people in various industries because it has applications across the board.
All kinds of industries. I already had some talent in being able to spot things that might be important and think about them and make connections, intersections between these ideas. Just in the last couple of months, I've done a fintech conference. I went to a jewelry industry event. I went to a heating and air conditioning convention. I went to a travel and hospitality group. And so in every situation, I'm coming in as the outside thinker. And my perspective is not one of, I'm a deep expert in your industry. My perspective is, I look at all industries and what I want you to do is think outside of your industry and bring some of those lessons in so that you can learn from them. And we see more and more how this crossover is happening across industries. I mean, Apple, that was in the world of technology, launched a credit card. Taco Bell has opened a hotel. Crayola crayons started making makeup. I mean, there's so many brands that are saying, you know, we're in this industry, but we're going to try over here doing something different to expand our business and to reach our customer in different ways. Red Bull was an energy drink and now they're a media empire, right? I mean, there's so many examples of brands that have done this in different ways. Capital One has coffee shops, right?
And that's all thanks to being non-obvious thinkers. So,
yeah, I mean, sort of. Yeah, it is. Oh, they're all examples of non-obvious thinking for sure.
Can you give us an example of non-obvious thinking that could be applied in the financial sector?
Yeah, one of my favorite recent examples is about underserved markets, which I think is a huge topic in financial services. There are underserved markets in financial services. And one of the examples from outside financial services that could offer some inspiration is a company called Reframed that was founded by two entrepreneurs, African-American, who looked at the market for eyeglasses and realized that there were no eyeglass manufacturers that were making eyeglasses for wider brimmed noses, wider brimmed faces. And a lot of African-Americans need wider lenses, and that just wasn't in the market. And so that's what they created with this company, Reframe. And they served a whole different segment of the market that was not served by anyone with something as common as eyeglasses. And to me, there's a huge opportunity right now in financial services to design products and services for some of those underserved markets. And the problem is that a lot of these companies that have the opportunity to do that don't have people who look like those customers working there. They don't have leadership that looks like those potential customers. And so they don't think of that, right? That innovation never happens because there's no one who represents that group in that team.
So how do you stay switched on to emerging trends? And what do you read or watch or listen to or subscribe to in order to stay on top of everything?
So throughout the whole week, I save stories. And then on Wednesday, I write a weekly email that goes out on Thursdays. And in that weekly email, I share with my email subscribers the 5 to 7 most interesting stories of the week, the most non-obvious stories of the week. So I can't talk about the big story, right? Like the week after the Oscars, one of my stories would not be about the slap, you know, Will Smith and the slap. Like that's too obvious. Everybody knows about that. My stories would be about things that people haven't generally heard. And for me, that's become a habit because in order to produce that email, I have to read hundreds of stories, or the headlines at least, of hundreds of stories, choose which stories I actually read in full, and then save those stories and then narrow that down to just 5 or 7 to share along with my take for why they matter. That's what allows me to see what's coming. That's what allows me to see the trends because of the discipline of doing that every single week. I mean, imagine instead of watching TikTok videos or scrolling, you know, Twitter or whatever else, imagine you spent that time finding the most interesting stories of the week and having a process on your phone to just save them, right? That's what I do every single week. And so for me, when people say, well, how do you get all these ideas? How do you know what trends are coming? Well, I'm spending 6 hours every week at least reading stuff that is unrelated to anything I'm working on with the objective of finding the most interesting stories of the week to share in my email. And over time, you know, a story that I found 3 months ago might relate to something I saw yesterday, might relate to something I see 3 weeks from now. And now all of a sudden, those three things, when you see the interrelationship between them, you're like, oh, there's a trend happening here.
Are there other aspects that usually draw you to a story other than the fact that it's not front page news right now?
Yes. I look at something that demonstrates that there may be some momentum. So something that seems to be taking off that not that many people are paying attention to. And at the end of the day, I believe that trends are never about technology. They're about what people do with the technology or how that technology affects people's lives. So in the beginning, people were like, oh, NFTs are a trend. That's not a trend. That's such a thing that exists. Now, what's the human manifestation of that trend, right? For example, it could be that people in general are more willing to consider a digital product to be worth paying money for. Right. So that could be a macro trend where it's always been this challenge from a perception point of view of like, I need to hold something in order for it to feel like it has value. And I'm not going to pay for a digital avatar or something like that of myself. Whereas now, maybe that's starting to shift for some people where they see things digitally and they're like, you know, that digital experience is worth paying for.
You're making me feel like I was really ahead of the curve when I was paying for ringtones in middle school. I was ready to give money for digital assets. So you've also talked a lot about the concept of an accelerating present. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that and what it means for businesses and leaders.
Yeah, it's part of my definition of a trend. And my definition is that it's a curated observation of the accelerating present. And I use that phrase because I think that there are signs of the future happening right now. And I will never write about something as a trend that is a guess, where I'm like, oh, this could happen. Like, we could have flying cars in the future. I mean, sure, we could. But what I'd rather write about is something that's starting to happen right now, but that is going to amplify.
So how would you compare financial services, the financial services industry, with other sectors, for better or for worse?
I think it is in the middle and probably on the more risk-averse side because of regulation. I mean, everybody who's listening to this probably knows the reasons why. It's not the fastest moving industry, but it doesn't give anyone a license to say, well, we don't want to be innovative or we should always be second. Because at the end of the day, in every industry, there's always an early mover and there's always late movers. And it doesn't always have to be the small companies, the nimble fintech startups are the ones who move faster, and the big heritage brands are the ones that move slower. It doesn't always have to be that way. So I think that the real challenge for any organization is to say, you know, how fast do we want or need to evolve? And what level of disruption are we comfortable with? And to some degree, that comes down to whoever the leadership is of that particular organization. Like, how forward-thinking are they? And how much, honestly, I mean, this is probably kind of tough to hear, but like, honestly, how much do they care about how competitive that company is in 10 years? And that mindset is really hard to get past because our whole incentive system is set up for that, for the short-term results. People are rewarded on the short-term results. Leaders are rewarded on thinking now and, you know, screw the future, right? And that mindset holds companies back from long-term visionary success. And it's why companies like Amazon, where they have a leadership that can afford to say, how is this going to play out 10 years from now? And we don't care if we lose money for 4 years. That's why they win, because they have a long-term mindset that other companies just don't.
Rohit, we know you're all about acceleration and moving at 100 miles per hour, but let's take a deep breath in and slow it down. Imagine the love of your life running towards you in slow motion. Does that remind you of Baywatch? They look good, huh? Let's take things slow now. Talk to me about what you love about financial services.
There are people who get into real financial trouble because financial literacy is just not taught properly to anybody, especially younger people. What I'm really excited about is that there is a potential now, finally, for financial services companies to proactively support that knowledge through things like alerts and limits and education. And not everybody's doing it right now. But if you think about the opportunity for that, like, for the first time in really our human history with financial services, that's a role that actually the industry can take. Like, there's some world-changing stuff that financial services companies and professionals working in those industries can do for people's actual lives if they choose to prioritize them. And like, I think that's pretty awesome. Like, I think that's pretty exciting. I don't know if it's like Baywatch running towards you exciting, but you know, yeah. It's exciting.
I'm excited because the temptation to do stupid shit is greater than ever. I could save for my pension, or I could buy a picture of a monkey in sunglasses.
Yeah, and be one of a million people that can use it digitally. I mean, who could turn that down?
I actually, there was a huge spike in like romance scams. And so I know, at least in the UK where I live, all online banks, every time you try to make a transfer, would say, are you transferring this to a person who said they loved you on the internet?
That's right. Fine. My money is a symbol of my devotion.
They say if you love someone, set them free. Sometimes in life, we need to break up with the things that could be holding us back. So tell me one thing you want financial services to break up with for good.
I would say creating predatory products When you have the power to take advantage of someone in a clear and obvious way with a 300% interest rate on something, it doesn't mean you should do it. It means you should stand up and say, you know, this person needs a little protection from me, not me taking advantage of them. So I wish that's what we would stop.
So what future trends and changes do you see having the biggest impact on financial services?
Well, I think there's a number. I mean, one that I wrote about that I called flux commerce, which was this idea that the lines between industries are blurring. And I think that's a big point of disruption to start thinking about. Like, what happens when, big question, right? Like, what happens when your grocery store becomes your bank? If that happens, right? Like, how would that change everything? What happens when you start to merge your retirement fund with your favorite clothing retailer? I mean, these are the sorts of questions and things that increasingly I think are going to have to be asked within financial services to prepare for the future. Not to say that's going to happen, right? I mean, I don't know if there's going to be a Nike retirement fund or whatever, but these are the kinds of things that we need to start thinking about. And the trend that relates to that is one that I wrote about in Non-Obvious Megatrends that I called flux commerce. So that's a big one that I think is going to affect financial services. Another one that I wrote about, I called human mode. And that was, in a world where we have more and more technology and more automation, we appreciate and value more highly those moments when we can interact with humans when we want to. So do we want a human to give us cash instead of an ATM? No, we don't. We want the ATM. We want the convenience. We want it to happen faster. Dealing with a person would be disruptive. But do we want to get financial advice and expertise from a person instead of a robo-advisory firm? Yes, we do. And science has shown, experiments have shown that over and over again. Like, even robo-advisory firms have created premier tiers where they have human financial advisors because people want to get that advice from a person who understands their situation and who can give them some expertise or take care of them in terms of how they should allocate their money. So that whole trend around the human mode and where do we add humanity and where do we invest more in the people and where do we invest more in the automation and how do we get that balance right? That's going to be huge in financial services.
Absolutely. Also, my brother's sneaker fund is his retirement fund. So we talked about, the producers and I talked about this, and I'm sure you get asked about this all the time, but what are your thoughts on the metaverse? Is this something you see in the accelerating present, or is it way off in the distance for you? And how have you gotten involved, if at all?
I think that right now it is more of a kind of novelty. I don't think that we are anywhere near the sort of science fiction world of me preferring to exist and interact with other people in the metaverse versus real life. I don't think we're anywhere near that. But I do think that the metaverse is going to become something similar to what other social media platforms have become. I mean, if you think about TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, there are some people who have an unhealthy relationship with how much time they spend on one of those platforms, either creating content or engaging with people or basically living their entire life through that platform, right? In terms of the images they take and they're an influencer and they make money through it. There are going to be people like that for the metaverse also. But I don't think that represents most people. Most people will use Facebook to connect with a few people, do a post every once in a while, read and catch up with some people, and then they'll shut it off. And that's what the metaverse is going to be for most people also. Something that you can log into, you can check out. And there are people today who are still not on Instagram. They're not on Facebook. So there'll be people like that too, who are like, I don't need this metaverse crap. I don't need this digital stuff. I'd rather go and have a coffee with a friend in person.
I think that's probably the most measured answer I've ever heard about it. Because it's always very, very extreme both ways when you ask people about it. So that's very, very exciting.
Technology's never really happened. Like, there's never been anything where it's like, oh man, everybody's like, literally everybody's on this thing, like right away. That technology adoption doesn't work like that. I mean, the closest we probably came was everybody getting on Zoom during the pandemic, right? Because we were forced to. And yeah, I don't see that happening with the metaverse.
I hope you're right. Do you have an avatar? Have you been in the metaverse?
No, I haven't gone to that deep level yet because there's still too many changes right now. So I haven't played around with it in depth. I have logged in and tried a few things, but I haven't gone to the, like, the next level yet.
We like to end by giving our listeners some upfront advice. So what tips can you give our listeners to navigate their way to the future?
I would say broaden your diet of what you pay attention to. Try and be thoughtful about what you read right now and what you're not reading and what you're not paying attention to. And try to open yourself to seeing more of that content. You know, pay attention to if you live in a household with other people who are other ages, look at the media that they look at instead of just the stuff that you like. Log into your Netflix or your Hulu or whatever with, you know, someone else in your household's profile and see what shows show up for them and watch one of them. Pick up magazines that you would never read otherwise. For me, that would be like Teen Vogue magazine for like teenage girls. I have no reason to read that magazine. But if I do, and I have on occasion, I'll see stories and things that are totally unfamiliar to me. And it allows me to get outside of my world and into kind of the mindset of someone else, someone who's not anything like me.
I would like to thank Rohit Bhargava and all of my guests throughout the series for getting upfront with us, sharing their insights and letting us know what they love about financial services. If you fancy some more non-obvious thinking, head to the link to the Upfront blog in our podcast notes for more on that, where you'll also find content from all 10 episodes. And seeing as this is the last episode of the series, I wanted to leave you with a little treat. We're giving away 10 copies of Rohit's book, Non-Obvious Megatrends. To be in with a chance of winning one, all you gotta do is send your name, address, and a line about what you love about financial services to upfront@iRes.com. Check out the T's and C's in our blog. If you loved what you heard, make sure you follow and subscribe to Upfront so you'll be the first to know when new episodes come out. Hasta la vista, baby! Upfront will be back.